Welcome to the Data Life Podcast. In this podcast, we talk about real life experiences with data, talk with people doing cool data things, discuss tools and more. Data sets are getting larger and messier. To mine these and get insights out of them requires a lot of effort and expertise. But there are tools that can help quite a bit. One such tool is Airbyte. Today, I'm really excited to be talking to the founder and CEO of Airbyte, Michel Tricot. Michel is an amazing thought leader in this space and has seen Airbyte really gain traction in just over a year, including raising over $30 million in capital and becoming really someone who's having a say in the crowded data tool space. In the first half or so, we'll talk about the technical aspects of data platforms, ETL, ELT, data warehouses, etc., and where kind of Airbyte fits into this whole data landscape. We will also cover how it does what it does, being an open source data tool. Later on, we will cover the life aspects of running a company, such as raising capital, hiring, and so on. Without further ado, let's invite Michel on the show. Welcome, Michel. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Sinkit. Thank you so much for having me.
I do want to start the show by asking a question, which is, what do you like the most about being a CEO of a fast-growing startup? And what is one biggest challenge?
I would say what I like is that it's fast-growing. That's an amazing, that's an amazing thrill. And building a product that is basically a problem that I faced over my past 15 years, like working with data, is and making it available for more and more people is really the thing that gets me up every morning. And in terms of my biggest change, I would say, as we're growing, it's like how much I can get out of my time. So things that I like to do that I need to delegate, things that I need to learn how to like, because making sure that I get the best average out of my time is always a challenge, and it changes every month.
Yes, I can understand. And prioritizing different things is definitely a challenge. Okay, so that sounds really good, and it's amazing that you're gaining traction. You know, for a lot of startup, that can be a challenge, right? So now let's actually dig in a little bit into Airbyte and really kind of understand the product itself, right? So could you talk at a very high level about the data platform landscape, like ETL versus ELT? Also, like, there are things like Spark and DBT and so on. So I just want to hear kind of your thoughts on this entire kind of landscape and where kind of Airbyte fits.
The best place to start is to think about data processing. And if you look what it was like 10 or 15 years ago, everybody was using Hadoop, everybody was using like very, very technical tools to process data. And what we've seen over the past 5 years, it's more data warehouses have become the norm on how companies are actually processing and consuming data. And the good thing with data warehouses is that, especially with the modern ones, they scale automatically. They are elastic in terms of how many people can use them, how many queries you can run. They have a pricing model that is really adapted to like the value you get out of it. And they are simple to use. And that is a piece that is critical with data. Is the more access you give to people to data, the better you become. Because the more insights you can have, the more you can dig into sub-questions after your initial questions. And From there, I think you can see that you have everything that is about the consumption. So you have like DBT, which is about like the transformation, the modeling. You have everything that is about BI tools, about analytics. And on the other side of the warehouse, you have everything that is about how do I actually get data into the warehouse. And like that's obviously where Airbyte plays. And you also have like Fivetran, you have Stitch, you have other type of tools that are basically helping people get the most out of their data warehouse. And I think from there, we can see a lot of additional tools like quality, like observability of the data, compliance, privacy, all of that that is getting plugged on top of all these pipes and on top of these warehouses.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And especially, you know, like you don't want developers in your company kind of writing those connectors and like debugging them, connecting to all those APIs. So I think definitely having, so Airbyte is at the E layer, right? Is that right? It does the extraction for you, and then it would do the loading, and then you do the transform later, either using dbt or Spark or some other thing.
That's correct. Yes, the thing with transformation is that transformation is where you inject your logic. And the thing is, when you inject your logic, it means that you already know what kind of insight you want to get from it. So when you look at ETL versus ELT, ETL is about you extract the data, you apply your logic, and then you load it. Meaning that if tomorrow you want to have another data consumer, like a data analyst, an analytics engineer, to do some different type of analysis, you need to do the same process. You need to re-extract the data, you need to re-transform, and then you need to load. And you can see that this is a very inefficient way of processing data, because now every single data analyst, every single analytics engineer has to know how to load data into the warehouse, how to extract data from a silo of data. Whereas when you look at ELT, and I think the fact that warehouses have become cheaper and cheaper in terms of storage, ELT allows you to be very blind to how you're going to be leveraging that data. So you just take the data from any kind of silos and you just make it available. And by making it available, now you're empowering people to be smart with it. And that's why we're really seeing this shift in paradigm between ETL and ELT.
Yeah, that is especially, I think, one of the big trade-offs is, as you mentioned, storage. And I think now it's cheaper. It's so much cheaper. And you can replay the transformations again. If there are bugs, you can just do it again for the entire data. And it also plays very nice with analytics tools, so website traffic and so on. So I think it's really good. My follow-up actually question is around, personally, I've used both dbt and Spark in our company's ELT workloads. Do you see them kind of like, it seems to me that it's like two streams that is coming up in the industry, right? There are some people who love SQL, who just want to do everything in SQL, who love like keeping everything in warehouse and SQLing their way. Then it goes to BI tools like Looker or Tableau or Power BI. And then there are other people who love this whole Spark and Databricks and all of this piece. So the customers of Airbyte, like, do they prefer one over the other? And what are your personal preferences?
I don't have a personal preference, because I think whether you use one or the other depends on your use case. And it's good that both actually exist, because there are things that are extremely easy to do in SQL and others that are awful to do in SQL, whether you have dbt or not. Or sometimes it can be almost impossible without going through a lot of like intermediate transformation steps. Whereas with Spark, it's you have code and you can decide how you want to actually process your data. So I think it really depends on your use case. Now, obviously, SQL is easier to learn and to leverage. So it means that you have access, like more people can have access to the data through SQL, whereas Spark remains or Python remains like scripts that are very specific to a set of engineers. So I think at that point it becomes who is going to leverage the data. So I don't have a preference. And actually with Airbyte, you can do both. You can either send to a data warehouse, or you can send to like blob storage or to like non-warehouse, more like data lake type of outputs and destination.
And what was your preference?
My preference? If I want to do analytics, I prefer to interact with a warehouse. If I need to do some operational transformation and something that goes into a data pipeline where the product is the data, then maybe more on the Spark or Hadoop side, yes.
Yeah, that's a cool point. So if it's serving other needs like analytics, maybe warehouse and then connecting to a BI tool makes sense. But if it's like ML or data as a product, maybe the whole Python and ML kind of landscape makes sense.
Yeah, although I would say that warehouses are also becoming very, much and more easy to use, easier and easier to use. So Sometimes you can also use the warehouse to do MLM and BigQuery. I understood that, where they have primitive for learn, like for creating models from BigQuery. And I think that tells a lot about like how powerful it is. And it's just a matter of like making this technology accessible to more people and more roles in companies.
That is true. I mean, if you could do ML on a warehouse, you don't need all that deployment and figuring out ML ops. Mm-hmm. In that sense, it is definitely more accessible. So actually, that's a great segue to the next question, which is warehouse itself. I know Airbyte might be able to write to almost all big data warehouses. Do you tend to like have certain like preferences between warehouses, or are you seeing a certain trend that is occurring in the industry?
No strong preference. I think they all have their pros and cons. But because we're building a platform, we don't want to be opinionated. We definitely see like the top 10 destinations that people are using. And you have your usual suspects instead. You have BigQuery, you have Redshift, you have Snowflake. And people also use Postgres for data warehousing. So it's really, the thing is with data, it's you don't have like one way of doing things. It's always depend on how your data team is built, how your organization is built. Like data is like an enabler for your company use case and for your company product. It's generally not the end product. So you have to adapt to how your company is working. Redshift, you need to manage infrastructure. BigQuery and Snowflake, you don't. So I think it changes the way you consume and the operation effort that you need to put there. But I'm pretty sure that if you look at Redshift, it's maybe less expensive because of that, because you're also paying your own, like you're just buying instances, whereas the other one, it will really depend on how much you're using it.
Yes, that's true. But you need to pay for the maximum load that you expect during any given month, right? And it's not easy to downgrade. In that sense, like pay as you go just makes a lot more sense, I think, especially with the use case you are talking about. with much more democratic accesses. So I do want to now go into Airbyte itself. And I know that one of the differentiating factors for Airbyte is that it's open source. So I do want to understand how you're kind of keeping it open source. Like, do you have contributors kind of helping you build connectors? And how this whole open source landscape is working for you guys?
Yeah, so the reason why we decided to make Airbyte an open source project is that you have an infinity of sources where you can get data from, and it's impossible for a single company to do it. So instead of thinking about just connectors that are available, what we wanted to think about is what kind of platform we can build that enables data engineers, that enable data profiles to actually build connectors if they need to, or even better, customize existing one. Because today you have a lot of closed source solution, and when we talk to their customers, what you realize is that they are using some connector from this platform that they are paying for, and at the same time they're also building something on the side, and sometimes they are building one that already exists. And when you ask them why, they tell you, yes, because they are missing this type of records, or like these columns is not included into the replication process, so I need to build it, I don't have the choice. And at that point, when you realize that the default for connectors is to build, then open source is a perfect fit, because open source is here to replace build in data teams. So the day you have to build, look at what exists. If it doesn't fit exactly what you need, you can always improve or extend it. And you don't have to rebuild something from scratch. You can just focus on just the little piece of value that this connector brings you.
That is really awesome. And it reminds me of the whole open source community in Python and these libraries like Pandas and scikit-learn, you know, like they are being used not only by big companies, but also by a lot of the startups to, you know, create the next generation of data and ML companies. So, you know, I think open source is really awesome. How do you do code reviews? How do you make sure the quality is maintained across these pull requests?
Yeah. So first of all, we have a lot of tracking behind the scene on how good connectors are performing. And you can, like, if there is a problem with a connector, you can always go back to the previous version. Now, there is a science behind like how you build connectors, and they always follow the same path, which is they start by solving 80% of what they should, and then gaining the 20 remaining percent is about experimentation and it's about experience. So when someone contributes a new connector, they start at the beginning of the life cycle. And then as more and more people are using it, they encounter edge cases that are not handled by this connector, or like missing sources from that connector. And then people just add to it. And you see that your connectors become more and more solid and more and more reliable. And I think it's just, it converges there to like a very strong connector. And when, and sometimes we also decide to just reach out the vendor for that particular connector. We ask them, can you give us a sandbox account? And now we make that connector part of our like connector monitoring infrastructure, where we, every hours we're gonna check, make sure that the connector is working, that the API hasn't changed, and that the service is always up. So I think it's just, it converges to something that works better and better by having more and more usage.
Yeah, maybe you might need to invest a little bit more in the monitoring bit upfront, but in the long run, maybe you gain a lot from communities, insights, and knowledge.
Yeah. And it's really by being used by like over 5,000 different companies, we get all these signals of, is this connector working? Is it not? And the good thing is, it's just a matter of like having one person who is going to fix it, and suddenly everybody has access to that upgrade, and it makes the like this whole ecosystem better.
Yeah. Do you use any specific monitoring tools, or it's kind of custom built?
Yeah, it's custom built. Especially for connectors. We have specific way of running sources against their sandbox accounts. And also what we've done when we created the tooling for contributors to build connectors is we provide tests, like default tests, invariants, to make sure that the source behaves the way it should be in terms of does it spit out the messages with the right format? Does it answer all the specification that we've put in place to make sure that it is usable across all the Abitance instances?
Nice. That is really cool. So a couple of open source kind of projects that I really admire is Airflow and DBT, which seem to be like becoming really, really popular. DBT makes money through DBT Cloud. And Airflow, I know it's an Apache project, and like astronomer.io has come up, which has become like really big in like kind of hosting Airflow. So I want to understand how your kind of model works, like revenue model.
That's a perfectly timed question. Yeah. Because 2 days ago, we actually released Airbyte Cloud. So it's still limited to like US, like people in the US today, just for data regulation reason, and we're going to expand to more countries. But right now you can go and you can sign up for Airbyte Cloud. And the reason why we did it is not everybody has the time and the energy and the engineers to actually maintain Airbyte. So what we want is just remove that friction and get them through Airbyte Cloud, and they get the same value as the open source, version of Airbyte. But they never have to worry about upgrades. They never have to worry about operations.
Yeah, and I assume that will be a paid product, and then you'll have different tiers and so on. Yeah. That sounds really good. And so it's a logical question. Next question, which is, how is Airbyte different from Fivetran, Stitch, Meltano? Like, there are a bunch of these tools. So yeah, I do want to make sure we cover that.
Yeah. So the difference between Stitch and Fivetran is pretty obvious, is we are open source. Mm-hmm. So you can go, you can take connectors, you can tune them, you can get your customized connectors to run. If there is a missing one, you can build it and you can get it to run on Airbyte. So big difference. Also, we are like for cloud here, we're not charging, like our pricing model is very different in the sense that we don't charge on the volume, we charge on how long and like the compute time for ingesting data, which is, I think, very very disruptive for how data products are being priced. And for Meltano, I would say the big difference is that we are not based on Singer, and because Singer was created by Stitch after they got acquired by Talend, they kind of dropped the ball on Singer, and you can see that most of the connectors ultimately are not really working. And what you care about when you do data integration is you want to make sure that your pipes are working. So what we invest a lot on the quality of our connectors.
Yeah, I think that sounds really awesome. And so in terms of like the next kind of things that you plan to do technically for Airbyte, so you released Airbyte Cloud. What are your plans in the next year or so for the technical side for Airbyte?
Yeah, so there are a few. First one is we want to make Airbyte scale more efficiently. So that's a big part. So that not only you can have more like parallel replication pipeline, but also larger pipes. So how can we actually pull data from a clip stream Kafka topic that is very high scale. So scaling is a big one. Second one is going to be about how do we integrate with the rest of the data ecosystem. So today we integrate with Airflow. We want to also integrate with like Daxter, with Prefect. We want to integrate better with DBT. We want to integrate with Great Expectation or with cataloging solutions. So it's really about making sure that everything we know about the data or like everything you can do with Airbyte is actually accessible from other open source or closed source products. And that's one example. And also we want to, like a third one would be also around how can we nail like the schema evolution. So that's actually something we're working on right now to be a lot more solid for how schema evolves, because you're pulling data from the source, you have no control on how the source is behaving, the schema is gonna change. How do you propagate this change to downstream systems? And like, how do you put in place like policies for how people want to handle schema changes? And one thing I did not mention is continue to invest in like the CDK, because the CDK is a tool that allows contributors to build connector faster. And just we want to continue to make that easier and easier. And cover more and more use cases with the CDK so that we like the maintenance and the development of new connectors is a no-brainer.
Cool. Okay. I do have a couple of more questions on this one. One of them is that what are the most common connectors that is being used by your customers? Like, do you see that like there are certain connectors being used much more than others?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I would say definitely database is a big one. And that's one place where we see a lot of company, where we see volume-based pricing failing is for databases, because databases are generally very high volume. And there is a moment where it's cheaper to do it internally than to pay a service that charges by the number of lines. So databases are a big one for us. And after that, I mean, you have all the usual suspects. You have like all the ad, the ad APIs. You also have like Salesforce, like everything that is CRM or payment related. But database is a big deal.
Database is a big one. What about these other like Google Ads and Facebook and Google Analytics? Like those APIs are so hard to understand. Like, I mean, I've typically relied a lot on these other services to kind of rely or to get that data.
Yeah. I mean, you know, whenever we build a connector for ads, I automatically add like 3 more weeks to a project like this one, because they are much more complex. Authentication is harder, like the understanding the API is harder, rate limiting is harder. So nobody wants to build these connectors.
Yes.
So I think people will always want to go for something that was built by someone else on that front. And then it's also one thing that's happening for this, that people, when they are missing one element from the API, they can just go into it and they can add it. And now they have a template of how do you add this new stream of data. And you don't never have to understand everything from scratch. You can just copy and paste what was already done, or you can just inspire yourself from the existing code to just focus on like this new feature of the API, or like this missing record or string from the API.
So there are a lot of these titles in the data field, right? And that's like data engineer, data analyst, data scientist, ML engineers. Then there is analytics engineering, which is kind of coming up now around the whole DBT and all this landscape. So do you see, like, what are your thoughts on these different titles? And do you see Airbyte being used by one kind of group more than other?
Yes. So I'm going to reply on the Airbyte question first, and then maybe from there we can go on the different titles. So the way we see Airbyte is that Airbyte is maintained and installed by data engineers. Because in the end, when you look at data engineers, one of their role is about providing a data platform for their teams and for their organization, and providing strong guarantee on the data. Now, one thing that they were doing before Airbyte was building connectors to make sure that their teams can have access to data. Now, we give them a solution where they have access to these connectors and they don't have to build and maintain connectors. Now, Airbyte is a piece of the data infrastructure. Now, one of the things that we've been optimizing for is that if you look at data engineers, they want to expose the data platform. And to have a data platform, you want to enable other roles to be able to consume data. And at that point, the way we've designed Airbyte is you can configure Airbyte via API, but we also have a UI. And the UI is here for people that might be a little bit less technical and that want to self-serve on how they access data. And on that front, I would say, if you are a data scientist, you don't want to think about how you ingest data. You want to think about what kind of insights you can get from your data. So if we can self-serve the access to the data so that the data scientists can focus on just getting insights from the data, then it's a win-win for the data engineers and for the data scientists. And I think it goes the same with data analysts. Data analysts are generally a lot less technical. They might be more like SQL friendly, and that's not always the case. Maybe they just use a BI tool. And that's the same thing. You want them to be able to self-serve on the access to data. And analytics engineer is still different, where they are generally a little bit more technical, but very technical on the SQL side. And at that point, same thing. We want to enable them to have access to the data so that they can do their magic on the warehouse. So a little bit of like talking about Airbyte and also talking about how I see these different roles. But ultimately, we get into organization via data engineers because they want to allow the rest of the organization to self-serve on data.
Yeah, makes sense. Once the data is in warehouse, a lot can happen. Managers can make decisions, analysts can drive kind of analytical queries, data scientists can do some insights, ML people can do ML models. Yeah, that's definitely correct. Yeah. It's the first step of mining the data, right? It's like for oil, like they say data is a new oil and oil needs to be mined as well. So in the same way, this is kind of like the main first step to do that.
Yep.
That's awesome. Okay. So I think now I want to switch gears and go into the business side of Airbyte and your journey. So we'll be back right after a short break, guys. Don't go anywhere. This is going to be exciting. All right. Michelle. So yeah, let's come back, and now we will jump to the business side of Airbyte. The first question actually I have around that is, what made you kind of start Airbyte? What was your vision and how you kind of got to where you are today?
Yeah, so starting Airbyte basically comes from my experience working with data. So I've been working in the data space for 15 years now, different scale, whether it's like finance scale, whether it's internet scale, where we're moving like hundreds and hundreds of terabytes of data every single day, and also working later on IoT scale. So getting sensor data, getting like real-time data, and making sure that this data gets propagated into like application and systems. I got burned a lot of time with data integration because you're basically working from something that you have no control on. And what I've learned about this past 15 years is really how to build a team to solve this kind of problem, because it's not just a technological problem, it's a process problem as well, where because you don't have control, you cannot solve it with technical solution only. You can help with technical solution, but it becomes like you need to accept that things are always going to break. I mean, someone who tells you that data integration doesn't break is lying to you. It will break because you don't have control on the source or on the destination. And at that point, yes, it's just a matter of process. And in 2019, I was brainstorming with my co-founder, John, and we fairly quickly settled on a problem space that we wanted to address, which was leveraging both of our experience around data integration. And we did YC in early 2020. At the time, we did not really have like a vision of the product, but just a vision of the problem space. And after that, it became 6 months of a lot of discovery, talking with, we would have like 10 calls every single day with potential customers or like data teams, like practitioner of data, to understand like how can we approach this the problem of data integration.
Yeah, so for listeners who don't know about YC, YC stands for Y Combinator. It is a startup accelerator, one of the most famous startup accelerators in the world. And companies like Dropbox, Reddit, Stripe, and Airbnb have been founded from Y Combinator. So Michel, how was your experience with YC, and how did YC help you find the product market fit?
Yeah, so interestingly, so we were in YC winter 2020, which is the batch that got hit by COVID. And so like on March 15, I think, when we're supposed to have demo day, that's when everybody had to go back home and where the whole world closed. Back at that time, we had a product. It was more geared toward a marketing audience, like allowing marketing team to get more data. And what we learned with COVID is that actually the product that we were building was a good to have, because as soon as COVID happened, we were unable to sell the product anymore. So we went through like a few months of searching, like what should we be doing? How can we best leverage what we've learned from this first few months at YC and with like building this initial product? And yeah, that's really in July that we settled on like the solution of Airbyte. And that came by after like talking to 50 to 60 customers of Fivetran, of Stitch, of Talent, of Material, like all those, the tools that exist in the space. And we released Airbyte in September 2020. But at that time, we didn't know we had a product market fit. We realized it end of September, because we just did a soft launch with people that we had talked to over the past year, and suddenly we started to see people using Airbyte. Although we had like, I think we had 6 connectors at the time, not like half working, but people were already using Airbyte to solve a problem. And after that, that was just like hyper growth it's been hyper growth since then.
Awesome. That's really great. And congrats on your first birthday. You just passed, right?
Yes.
That's really great. So you said hyper growth. So have you done any hiring yet, and how has your experience been kind of hiring out? It's at an early stage startup, like you want to make sure you hire great people.
Yeah, so we very quickly hired people that I had worked with in the past that knew the space very well, especially on the engineering side. So I think we were 5 people for a very long time, and I mean them, like the 3 of them were just amazing. They were with us on like finding PMF, pivoting from the marketing tool to the data tool. And yeah, I think the first people you need to set also the expectation very, very clearly, which is you're starting and you don't know what you don't know. You don't know if what you're building is going to be the right thing. So people need to be aligned on that. It is not going to be their 9-to-5 job. It is not going to be, I just write and then suddenly someone uses. No, there is a lot that needs to be done after you've written it. You need to sell it. You need to understand, was I building the right thing? So yes, I think today we are about 20 people in the company, but we were five or until November of 2020. And after that, we started hiring more people.
Any tips for our listeners who might also be looking to hire people for their startup ideas?
Yes. It depends. Is it for your team or for your co-founder?
Both. Let's do both, actually. Yeah, I think people would appreciate on both, yeah.
Yeah. Co-founder, you don't find, I mean, I'm sure there are counter example, but you don't find your co-founder on Craigslist or on like a job board. You need to trust. I mean, it's someone, you know, people say it's a marriage, and that is very true. You need to know that you can trust that person, because if you don't trust, it's going to eat up all your energy. And with John, we've been very lucky. We've known each other for a few years, and we've worked on side projects together. So we already had experience working together. We knew each other. We knew what were the strengths and weaknesses of each of us. And yeah, finding a co-founder is the hardest thing. Now you probably should have a co-founder as well. Like doing it yourself alone, it's a very, very hard experience. We have a lot of friends who are single founder, and yes, the down are very down, the up are very up, but they are downer than when you're two. And for your team, I think, especially your initial team, like working with people that you worked with in the past is important, because you already have ways of communicating, you know, weaknesses and strengths of people. So I think whether they were your friends or whether they were your former colleagues, yeah, finding people that you work with, de-risk the hire a lot.
Yeah, that's a good point. And how do you kind of sell to them that what you're working on might not be used? You know, it's like you need to also be a salesman, actually, right?
Yeah. I mean, the first hire, they need to be like risk taker. If you won't be able to hire someone who is looking for a 9-to-5 job, because they cannot live with the uncertainty. Here, you need to figure out people who want to be in a startup, but really want it. It's not just, oh, startup are cool, let's try a startup. No. Like, you need to set the expectation from the beginning, and don't oversell something that is not true. Like, if you don't know if your product is the right one, don't tell them that the product is the right one. Tell them, we are building this product. You're going to be part of it. It might fail. If it fails, that's fine. We're going to find what is the next step. But you need to set the expectation from the beginning. And be transparent. Yeah, be transparent. As if the product doesn't work, just tell them as it goes. Don't try to hide that. And that's what we did over the first few months of Airbyte before we actually did Airbyte, is we were telling them they knew everything about it's working, it's not working, it stopped working. And I think that helps.
Yeah, that's a really great point on transparency and not overselling. I think that's really cool. And so I do want to now start talking about kind of like raising capital. So I know it's really important for an early stage startup. And how has your experience been? And how do you kind of explain this whole ETL, ELT space to investors who might not be, you know, every day dealing with data engineers?
I think when you raise capital, so it depends on, like, obviously it always depends on how much traction your product or your idea is getting from the beginning. But so we started with a pre-seed, and pre-seed was really with people that we'd known, my co-founder and I, and also people that we wanted to bring with us on the adventure, people that can advise us. So it was not just open for everybody. It was people that we know, that we trust, that we work with, that have expertise in the industry that can help us. And then it becomes try to have the choice on the partners that you talk to, because what you want is you don't want just partner for money. Because if it's just for money, then you can go so, I mean, what you're doing is you're building a company. So you want money, but you also want people that know how to build companies, that can advise you on how to build companies. And I would say with John, one thing that we are doing is we were looking for a partner who we did not have to spend an hour trying to explain why what we were doing was important. So basically people that already knew that what we were building was a necessity in the data world. And that's why I try to get the choice so that I don't want to have to explain to anyone like what is ETL. I want a partner that knows why it is necessary for data. Because if you find a partner like that, then it means that they have an understanding of the industry, they have an understanding of the pain, they live and breathe like this industry, and they will tell you also, they will be very good at telling you, oh, look at this company, that's going to be interesting what they do. You should probably also try to see if you can do a partnership with them. So basically, you're looking for a partner, you're just not looking for money. And if you can follow that advice, I think things are going to go better. Because if it's just money, then the day something doesn't go well, or like the industry is going down a little bit, then people will be worried about money instead of being worried about the company.
Yeah, that's a great point. Find a partner and not just somebody to kind of who invests in you. I think that's a really great point. I do have one more question, which is that since you are a founder and CEO, I know it can be very stressful and also incredibly fun and exciting. But I do want to understand how you kind of keep yourself motivated, any books and podcasts that you have found really awesome and that you can recommend to our listeners.
I mean, for books, I would say it depends on what, I mean, when I read book, I read fiction more, because what I want is I want to think of something else, like reset my brain. So whether it's like watching a TV show or reading a fiction book, now I do read books about how to become a better CEO. I don't have like titles out of the top of my head. Happy to share some after that. But like, yes, I have self-improvement books, but I would say I try to optimize also for making sure that I have time to reset so that I get and recharge in energy when I'm a little low on it. And
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. How do you kind of switch off? Like, are you like always engaged with Airbyte throughout the day till you sleep, or is like, do you have ways to kind of blow off the steam?
So I try to have one evening per week where I'm fully off, and generally I spend it with my wife, and we try to go for some nice dinner at that time. I also have two kids, so on Saturday I try to spend like exclusive time with them. It's not always possible, to be clear, but it's a priority. But other than that, I would say yes, I'm pretty involved into Airbyte the rest of the time.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. No, that's really cool. To take block time for that. But that is really awesome. I think we learned a lot talking with you. Do you have any kind of tips or advice for the listeners, how they can reach out to you, and how can they get started with Airbyte?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the first place I would start is go on airbyte.io, whether you want to use cloud or open source, and you can join us on our public Slack, so slack.airbyte.io. We have like, you have the access to the whole team, like we're completely open, so all the engineers from Airbyte, all the sales and PMs are there, so you can talk with them, they can help you. I would say that's pretty much it. And I'm on Slack, so you can also contact me there, and I will reply to you. So you're welcome to join.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds awesome. The slack.airbyte.io and airbyte.io is the website itself. I'll make sure to put that in our show notes. Sounds really awesome, and wish you all the best. I think Airbyte is a very exciting product from what I've seen. It's been growing really insanely, and it's really great to see that.
Yeah. Thank you, Sanket.
That was the show. Thank you so much for joining us for yet another show of the Data Life podcast. Please don't forget to leave good reviews, subscribe, and share this episode with as many people as you can. Take care.